Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes that feels counterintuitive, just like the nightingale, a bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and I'm so glad that you could join me today for a special focus on something that's been talked about more and more, and that's dementia. It appears to be on the rise, but is that something we just have to accept? Well, possibly not. There's a lot of research now into the causes of Alzheimer's and vascular dementia, and one organisation, the Food for the Brain Foundation, is out to help us all minimise the risks. Patrick Holford is the founder of both the Food for the Brain Foundation and the Institute for Optimum Nutrition. Now, he's been a leading spokesman on nutrition and mental health for many years, and he's a prolific author. And I asked him to tell me all about this new charity and its goals. By the way, please excuse the squeaky voice. My voice started to fail me that day, but as you can hear, I recovered very quickly. Here's Patrick Holford.
Well, yes, at our charity foodforthebrain.org, we have been running a project which is called Alzheimer's is Preventable. And we've actually tested, I'll tell you about that, 440,000 people now.
Wow, yeah.
That was quite a lot. But the essence of it is that I'd almost like to start with a positive. I'm here because of two amazing people. One was the twice Nobel Prize winner, Dr. Linus Pauling, who had 48 PhDs. And when Einstein Einstein was asked, "Are you a genius?" he said, "If you want a real genius, it's Linus Pauling." Some of you will know him because he put vitamin C on the map.
Yeah.
And the other is a lovely man who worked with Linus Pauling in the 60s, Dr. Abram Hoffer, who was the head of psychiatric research in Canada and successfully treated 6,000 people with schizophrenia. And my sort of origin of this is I'm a psychologist, and when I was an undergraduate studying schizophrenia, I came across this phenomenal research which I didn't know was on B vitamins versus placebo on schizophrenia. And I didn't know at the time, but it was the first ever randomized controlled trial in the history of psychiatry. Jumped on a plane, went to meet this man, Dr. Abram Hoffer, and said, "How many people have you treated?" And he said 3,000. Before he died, it was 6,000. And I said, "What's your success rate?" He said, "About 85% cure." And I said, "I've never seen a cured schizophrenic. You know, please define what you mean by cure." And he said, "Free of symptoms, able to socialize with family and friends and pay income tax." So I asked if I could meet some of these formerly schizophrenics, which I did. And then I asked, "Can I be your student?" And so I was the student of Dr. Abram Hoffer. Now, he, in his sort of mid-90s, he stopped working 2 weeks before his death. And 4 days, and he was on my scientific advisory board. I mean, he was as sharp as a razor. And 4 days before his death, he said, "I don't feel so good." 2 days before his death, he checked into the local hospital. He didn't have any diseases as such. And he died at peace, not in pain, with a couple of weeks off work. And the other man, Dr. Linus Pauling, he actually did get prostate cancer. But I filmed him 6 months before his death when he was working on an astonishing theory of heart disease, which we now know is true. It's just coming through now. And again, he was absolutely as sharp as a razor. So there is a type of inherited Alzheimer's, which is based on inheriting two genes called AP or presenilin. And that occurs in about 0.5% of cases. In other words, well under 1 in 100 cases of Alzheimer's is genetic. And if you happen to have a mother or father, you know, with one of those genes, you've got a 50% chance, and it strikes early in the 50s and 60s. So if you're looking at someone who gets either Alzheimer's or vascular dementia, both of which have the same sort of cause and prevention treatment in the 80s or 90s, is definitely not genetic. So the question is, what's the other bit? You know, and that's what we've really been focusing on at foodforthebrain.org.
Right. So what is the other bit?
Well, there's sort of two ways to answer that. I mean, the first thing, and it's actually literally just come out, we have an incredible board of scientific advisors, all of which work for nothing for our charity. And they include the top man in China, who's called Professor Jintai Yu at Fudan University, top guy in the UK, professor of pharmacology, emeritus professor, Professor David Smith. And they're both authors of a paper which has just come out, and which has looked at various prevention factors, not all of them, and concluded that up to 74% of all cases of dementia can be prevented. So, you know, that's quite a big number. So what's interesting, and no one's really sort of done this, is there's about 30 risks, you know, we know about. Like for example, having hearing problems increases your risk. Having cataracts increases your risk. Not exercising, being lonely, not having social interaction, not having intellectual stimulation. And then not having omega-3 is very important. And sugar, you know, is a driver, and smoking is a driver, and pollution is a driver, and so on. So a lot of different risk factors, which I'm sure we'll sort of dig into in various ways.
Definitely.
But no one's really thought about, well, why all these? And by the way, if you have cataract replacement or you get a hearing aid, your risk goes down. And it takes me back to the 80s, no, the 70s, actually, when I was playing tennis with a very interesting physicist called Fritjof Capra, who wrote a book called The Tao of Physics. And, you know, I'm 65. Some people my kind of age will kind of vaguely remember that. Because
I do vaguely remember that, yeah.
Yeah, he was the first system-based thinker. And I remember probably on the tennis court, you know, he said, Patrick, what's the difference between an animate object and an inanimate object, like you and a bicycle? And he said, both have parts. The parts relate, you know, chain to wheel and so on. But what's different in a living organism is there's this life flowing through it. So I started to realize that actually you need the right structure of your brain. So in other words, your brain cells have a structure, particularly the membrane, the sort of skin through which all the communication happens. You've got to have the right structure. And that's what breaks down, for example, in dementia, Alzheimer's. You have to have the right function, which means the fuel supply. So there's a very interesting thing happening here, which is the more sugar you eat, the more carbohydrates you eat, that glucose is taken into cells by a hormone called insulin. And the more you're demanding this process, the more resistant or insensitive you become to insulin. So ironically, what happens in the brain is as a function of eating too much sugar and carbs, you actually get glucose starvation inside brain cells, because the mechanism for delivering it in called insulin doesn't work. And as a consequence of less energy in the brain cells, you feel tired, you can't remember someone's name, you can't concentrate. It's, you know, it's all a big mental struggle. And it creates this energy gap, so to speak. And one of the professors that we work with, a lovely man in Canada, is Professor Stephen Kinane. Some of you will have heard of ketones. And ketones are actually a five-star fuel like glucose. And brain cells can only run on glucose or ketones, nothing else. Ketones are made in the liver, and they're made from fat. So one of the benefits of fasting is you start to break down your body fat, make ketones, and the ketones power the brain. But what we've learned, and the sort of nutrition aficionados will know, that there's certain types of fat, you know, think coconut oil, which contain what are called medium chain triglycerides, which are fats of a certain length. And it's to do with the length of the carbon bond. And actually, it's eight carbons long, which is called C8, which is what you make ketones from. So what Professor Stephen Kinane was doing in older people with pre-dementia was giving them 2 tablespoons of C8 oil, which is a part of coconut oil. So coconut oil only has 7% C8. And we've purified. So I have every day a tablespoon of C8 oil. It's very simple. Tastes almost neutral. Tiny hint of coconut. And your brain loves it. Your body makes ketones and it fills the energy gap. So, for example, if you've got a relative who's got, let's say, early stage Alzheimer's, and here the big problem is Alzheimer's is brain shrinkage. I mean, that's what it is. And once you've lost a chunk of your brain cells, they're not coming back. So there's no miracle supplement that's going to bring your brain cells back. But you'll always have some brain cells which are sort of partly functioning and, you know, run out of fuel. And just by giving your relative, you know, a couple of tablespoons of C8 oil, they may get a level of brain energy. So structure, which I really want to talk about, function, ketones, glucose. And by the way, whenever you make energy, you make exhaust fumes. So we keep hearing about all these wonderful antioxidants and polyphenols, like glutathione is a fantastic antioxidant. And, you know, we hear the dark chocolate has polyphenols, which it does. And red wine, there's actually a benefit in drinking a small amount of wine. You get less risk of Alzheimer's with 125 mil, which is a small glass of red wine, than you do not drinking or drinking more. So we've got antioxidants and we've got circulation. All of that's part of function. And then we have utilization. And that's where even if you have the best nutrition in the world, but you're lonely and you have very little social interaction and you watch crap on TV. And by the way, the amount of hours you spend watching TV is a risk for dementia as well. So you need all three: good structure, good function, and utilization. And I think when you get all those things together, you can basically dementia-proof yourself.
You know, it's really interesting what you're saying. I'm fascinated by this. And I know that on your website, there is a test that you can take, a survey. Yeah. And I did that. And although I am going to redo it again, because there are some things which I probably didn't fill in properly. Because you go into everything, lifestyle, you know, what your cognitive ability is right now, and also exercise, that sort of thing, what you eat. Do you take any supplements like B vitamins and things like that? So having done it, I got an email back saying that I had a 20% risk of dementia. And of course, you know, you can do things to mitigate that. And I have actually started doing things which would mitigate against dementia on top of what I already do. So I thought it was fascinating that on top of this cognitive test that you do at the beginning, you know, like very quickly saying, are these two shapes the same, you know, strings of letters, that sort of thing, that you also go into all of the lifestyle choices. You know, do you regularly socialize? And of course, I think communities, they've shown in the blue zones across the planet, community is one of the things that really helps people. But I'm kind of listening to you talking and I'm thinking, okay, so I am doing a swim every day in cold water. I swim in the sea every day, virtually every day. I have started walking at least 3 miles a day. I have, I fast. I do intermittent fasting. I eat food that's as organic as I can get. We can't, I think it's almost impossible to eat everything organic these days, but as much as I can, and I tend to know where my food comes from. So I do all of these things. And on top of that, I've been taking a glutathione supplement and an NMN supplement to help boost my mitochondria. So I'm thinking, from what you're saying, I should be doing pretty much nearly everything that I can do to offset Alzheimer's or vascular dementia, because those are both things that my parents had.
Yeah, there are two things you're missing. And I think the things you're doing are very good and we can talk about them. MNN is effectively a form of niacin, which is B3, it's niacin. Yeah. And glutathione is an antioxidant. But I'd like to sort of unpack a story as to how this started and how I got really interested as well.
Yeah, do.
It all goes back to a team at Oxford University headed by Professor David Smith, who had really found what Alzheimer's which was a shrinkage in the central part of the brain. And in fact, you get diagnosed with dementia or pre-dementia, which is called mild cognitive impairment, on the basis of a poor result on a cognitive function test, which is the first part of what you did online free. So that sort of shows where you're at. But you only get diagnosed with Alzheimer's if you do a brain scan, which was effectively developed by the team at Oxford, of the central part of the brain. So Alzheimer's is a disease in the way that diabetes is a disease. It's a very specific thing. So having noticed that there was a very high level in the brain of something called homocysteine, which you can measure in a blood test, and it's to do with B vitamins and something called methylation, they designed a study, randomized placebo-controlled trial, with several hundred people who had pre-dementia, giving half of them B vitamins. And we're talking about B6, B12, and folate. And I will say it's the B12 that's the most important. And the point here, and this is a trick that you could be missing, is the B12 is only in animal food, you know, meat, fish, eggs, milk. However, as one gets older, and this, we don't know exactly, well, we sort of know why, but not completely. Some people don't absorb it very well. And it's not a function of, you know, they could be extremely fit, having a very healthy diet, but still they're just not a B12 absorber. It's to do with stomach acid secretions, partly. But anyway, I mean, to put it in context, 2 in 5 people over 60 in the UK have insufficient B12 in their blood, not necessarily in their diet, but in their blood. So B12 is key. So they gave B6, B12, folate, or placebo, and got in the next year 53% less shrinkage of the brain compared to placebo, which is quite substantial since this is a disease of accelerated brain shrinkage. And at that time, and this was 2010, and this is like one of the best scientists in the world, published in the best journals in the world, they actually did another, they looked closely at the Alzheimer's areas and they had 9 times less shrinkage, 9 times less shrinkage. I mean, you can't argue with these brain cells.
No, no.
And by the way, to give it, put this a context of this, a few weeks ago, we had yet another barrage of headlines, you know, of the turning point and the beginning of the end of Alzheimer's with a new drug, which is an injection of anti-amyloid antibodies. Now, in that trial, they had 20% increased rate of brain shrinkage, right? Okay, but what happened in the B vitamin trial was 53% less brain shrinkage. However, and here's where it gets really, really exciting and interesting. They realized that the brain cell membranes, we're talking here about the structure of your brain cells, are mainly omega-3 DHA. It's a type of omega-3, very rich in fish, but you won't get it in chia or flax. And they there have been studies on B vitamins that haven't worked, and there have been studies on omega-3 fish oils that haven't worked. A lot of them have, but some of them haven't. And they realized that you actually can't incorporate the DHA into your brain membrane unless you are doing methylation, which means you've got enough B vitamins, which means your blood homocysteine is low. Above 11, you have accelerated brain shrinkage. So what happened was the Oxford team hadn't given omega-3, but they did have original blood samples. So they went back to their blood samples and analyzed the level of omega-3 in their participants and split them into the third with the lowest and the third with the highest. And what they found was the B vitamins do not work in those people with the lower omega-3 level. But instead of getting 53% less brain shrinkage, they got 73% less brain shrinkage in those given the B vitamins who had sufficient omega-3 and no further memory loss. And at the end of the trial, 30% actually had no clinical dementia rating at all, would not be diagnosed. So now if you look at these new drugs, which got 20% increased brain shrinkage, if you have enough omega-3 and you've given the B vitamins, there's 73% less brain shrinkage, not 20% more. And 30% ended the trial with no clinical dementia rating at all. While in the drug trial, no one got better. They just got a bit less worse on the drug. So what happened was I said to David Smith, now what? This was in 2010, now what? And he said, I mean, he was the vice dean of Oxford Medical School. He said, I hope within 5 years, it will be standard NHS policy. And I said, what would the policy need to be? And he said, you have to test everyone's cognitive function from the age of 50, because you can start to see subtle changes 40 years before a diagnosis. And if not good, measure the homocysteine. And if above 11, give them the B vitamins, although nowadays we'd say B vitamins and omega-3. And I didn't believe it would happen. I thought it might take 10 years. Well, actually, it's 2023. It's 13 years. Absolutely nothing's happened. So what we did is the charity foodforthebrain.org is we got permission to digitize that cognitive function test and validated it and make it freely available. And we've tested well over 400,000 people like you. And then working with my team of 12 top experts like Professor Stephen Kunane on the ketones, and there's another guy, Professor Robert Lustig, he's the king of sugar and all that sort of stuff, and David Smith B vitamins. We then developed the questionnaire that you filled out, which is called the Dementia Risk Index Questionnaire. And just so you don't get sort of too scared, basically, if you're doing everything wrong, you would score 100%. And if you do everything right, you'll score 0%. So it didn't really say you've got a 20% chance of developing dementia. It said your dementia risk index is 20%. So now there's room for improvement in what you're doing.
Of course.
And that's what's so lovely about the test, because a lot of people, some people say, I don't want to do it, I don't want to know. And that is the most stupid thing, because, you know, probably like you, you'll be fine on the cognitive function at this point in time, in the green, all is good. But if you do the test, you then know exactly what you need to do to make a difference.
And I'll tell you at the end of the show exactly what I did learn from taking the test. But first, it's time to take a short break. I'll be back with Patrick Colford after these messages from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ Stenhouse, the practical alchemist, and my guest today, Patrick Colford. And Patrick was telling us why it's important and can be so helpful to take the cognitive test his foundation offers.
And I'd love to tell you an example of this, of a guy called Nodge, if you'd like to know how it works.
do tell.
Well, I mean, this is the too late in the day sort of process. But basically, Nodge, or Alan Norris, his wife is Dorothy, got diagnosed in December with mixed dementia, which is Alzheimer's and vascular dementia. And when asked, well, what can we do? Said nothing. You know, you can join a dementia support group. A few months later, he was being sort of pressured to go on one of these terrible drug trials, which I think are unethical. Five people have died in the last two trials. Over 30% have brain bleeding or brain swelling. It's a terrible thing. You know, when you've got a better treatment, you know, why would you do that? But anyway, what happened was Dorothy found foodforthebrain.org, did the test, you know, with her husband, or her husband did the test. And she was, you know, he had omega-3, he'd heard about that, but weren't taking the B vitamins. And like you, went 5 days a month, went ketogenic, started having that C8 oil, which is called Keto Fast, joined a Morris dancing group, went to bed an hour earlier because sleep, getting more sleep actually helped within reason. I mean, just started to, because of what he learned, do these things. And I want to and tell you that at the point back in December, he got lost on the way to the loo at night in his own home. He couldn't go to the village. He couldn't find his way around his computer program. He couldn't turn his computer on or off. He was a gardener, and he couldn't even conceive of tomorrow. So how on earth could he plant his garden? He couldn't talk and eat, you know, at the same time. And 3 months later, his actual cognitive function has improved. His dementia risk index has reduced. He's back on his computer. He's planted his garden. Now, I don't want to pretend this is a reversal or whatever, because you know, this is way too late in the day, and he may continue to get worse. But he's got a lot better by taking these sort of actions. And I just wish that he had known that, you know, 2 years earlier, because basically, in that sort of pre-dementia stage, what we're seeing is arresting of this problem, and in some cases, improvement, you know, of cognitive function. And this is, you know, every day we have whatever it is, 790 people, double-decker buses worth of people diagnosed with dementia. The government pledged 160 million into dementia research. None of it's going into this kind of thing. Oh, and I should mention that what happened was one of the biggest B vitamin studies, which was mildly beneficial, went back to its results, looked at the blood level of omega-3, found exactly the same thing. Those with high omega-3 did really, really well. And then one of the biggest and most important studies on omega-3 fish oils, which had a very nice study, given 2 grams, that's like two capsules of fish oils. So I'm sure in Scotland, you eat, you know, herrings, sardines, mackerel.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're really, really important. But they got no effect in the study in early Alzheimer's. You could say maybe it was too late. They went back to their blood levels and didn't look at omega-3, but they looked at the B vitamin status, actually the homocysteine level. And those with a lower homocysteine below 11 had a massive benefit from the omega-3, while those with a higher homocysteine, lack of Bs, no benefit at all. So what we now know is that omega-3 and B vitamins together, there isn't a single study that doesn't show a massive effect, way beyond what is being reported in these rather manipulated drug trials. And I think it's just shocking and remarkably dishonest that this information is being hidden from the public and the medical profession, and no funding going into what really are incredibly cheap and simple and easy communication messages.
Well, I think that's across the board. There are so many easy things. I was actually just talking to somebody earlier and saying how I was collecting rose hips just the other day. And they grow abundantly around here. We have hedges of rugosa roses. Mm-hmm. And the hips are gorgeous right now. And I collected a whole load. And somebody, I didn't know them from Adam, but they came along and said, isn't it amazing how these just sit there? And nobody gathers them and does anything with them. When I was a child, we used to have rosehip syrup.
Mm-hmm.
Post-war vitamin C boost.
Yes.
And nobody will go for the cheap option anymore. It's as if we have to find something really complex, something really refined before we believe it'll do us any good.
Yeah, it's the same here in Wales because we got loads of elderberry and... if you ask, I'm in a farming community in the Black Mountains of Wales, like you growing.
Lovely.
I mean, we don't really buy any fruit or veg, the supermarket shopping is very simple.
Yeah.
Elderberries, if you ask it, what do you do for cold? They'll go elderberry syrup. They make, it's just a standard sort of Welsh thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, actually there is a real benefit in very high dose vitamin C. Of course, rose hips are remarkably strong in vitamin C. But yes, you're right. And what I started to realize is that these, randomized controlled trials, and I think, they're very good. And I just finished a book with 470 of them in it. Average cost is $7 million. Only industry that can really afford to do that is one where there's a patentable, man-made, profitable thing at the end, which is largely pharma. So we don't have enough study on vitamins because they're generic. So you can't make the money.
Yeah.
If a vitamin company spent the money, $7 million on a study on vitamin C, people don't go and buy their product. They just buy vitamin C. So it's not really affordable. And then, of course, if you do a randomized controlled trial, which is usually one thing like cataracts versus this or whatever, then the objective is to sort of roll it out to the public. So we're doing it the other way around, because I think Alzheimer's is a classic example where I guarantee you there will never be a cure. Because there is nowhere in your brain where if you block this thing, it won't happen. All these amyloid plaque is just a consequence of the process, not the cause. So basically what we're doing is citizen science. And we're inviting members of the public to become citizen scientists. Very soon, we're going to release a Pimprick home test where you can measure your homocysteine, your omega-3, your vitamin D, your blood sugar. It's called HbA1c. And we are tracking hundreds of thousands of people. And that means we can look at someone like you. And as you go through every 6 months, you redo the cognitive function test. We can know what you change and how that impacts your cognitive function. So we can find out what the perfect combinations of diet, behavior, etc. are. That's kind of like the what makes the difference, because it's interactive, synergistic. That's what you don't find in these very limited randomized trials. And then we've got a team headed by a wonderful Dr. Christina Curtis, applied behavior change experts. So then the question is, if having more exercise, taking more steps, being more social, whatever, if these things are really, really important, how across a digital platform, and we have Zooms and all sorts of things, do we encourage people to make those changes? And this, which I think is already, we've spent over a quarter of a million, but in real proper money terms, well over a million, has been funded by individuals like you who press the button and say, I want to be a friend, which is £50 a year. And I love this idea. I love this idea that we could end up with 1 million people who are all chipping in a little bit, not much.
Yeah.
Spending a little bit of time to find out what's going on. And by the way, when you've done the test, you have the option to join this thing called Cognition, where you get the sort of emails that target your particular areas of risk and reduce them. I have a lot of positive feedback and so on. So it's kind of like Zoe for the brain in a way. That's what we're doing, but we're keeping it charitable. So every single, I mean, there's only four of us. It's quite, you know, on the payroll. I think it's kind of the way that we, the public, need to take charge of our health. And rather than complaining about the NHS and so on, actually say, we probably recognize that we're not going to get a lot of help for a lot of these problems, which, by the way, on when you do the test, it's your B vitamins, your low carb and GL, it's the sugar, it's the brain fats, omega-3, vitamin D, healthy gut, active body, active mind, sleep and calm, we call it, which is stress. They are what's driving everything.
Yeah.
So one lady, and I've just been invited up to Huddersfield, and they want to make Huddersfield dementia unfriendly. And there's a wonderful charity there called Creating Health for All, set up by former GPs. And one of their kind of trustees did the test, has massively improved her score, feels fantastic, and has lost a stone in weight as a consequence.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all the same stuff.
And
that's the issue. How do we encourage people to take that step? And in this case, if you press the button, do the test, which is free, kind of it teases you in.
It does tease you in. And that's kind of what happened with me, although I was probably resistant because, you know, I don't like doing these tests and things. But I think that it's a great way for people to understand where they need to target their diet, their lifestyle, their everything. I do take a B vitamin supplement, although probably didn't do much about that when I was taking the test the first time around. I'm going to do it again. And do it with a bit more accuracy, I think, in terms of all the lifestyle stuff. But I think it's a great way for people to start. And yes, you won't get any disagreement, any argument from me over us taking control of our own health, because I think that is the only way forward these days. But it is amazing how, do we have any records of how prevalent Alzheimer's was maybe 100 years ago? Do we know what it was like then?
We do, and it is a modern disease. And for every disease that exists, there's a country that doesn't have it. So the other thing that's very important is, where is it happening? And for example, on the B12 front, you know, we know that the landlocked countries with less B12, like India as an example, have more Alzheimer's. We know that the fish-eating countries like Japan, you know, they do much better. So often by looking at where a disease occurs or does not occur. I mean, one of the terrible things that's happening now, which is part of, see, the thing is, in an ideal world, and we will launch this in January, you measure your homocysteine and probably yours is fine, and you therefore do not need to have, you know, large amounts of B12. Mm. The RDA, or what I call the ridiculous dietary arbitrary, is 2.5 microgram. We're giving 500 micrograms, 200 times the RDA. That's what you need if your homocysteine is high. At my age, 65, the odds of that are 50-50.
Yeah.
And we haven't fully found out exactly why, but we do know that, I mean, there are three drugs that will definitely create a problem. And the biggest one is the antacids, the proton pump inhibitors, which end in azole. Now, 4 years use of that is really cranking up dementia risk, because it stops you making stomach acid and stops you absorbing B12. Now, if you also happen to be a diabetic, you're metformin, that messes up B12. And then if you've also got high blood pressure and you take a diuretic drug, that messes it up. So we've got this sort of, you know, perfect storm of things coming together. And for one person, it's B12. And the other area that I find completely fascinating, which is the work of a genius professor, Michael Crawford, who's in his 90s, still, I mean, just writing, lecturing, you know, it's not a question of, you know, sharp. I mean, he's just worked out something which no one has ever cracked, which is how the photons that hit our eye turn into the precise and rapid image that you see as me. You know, how does that occur? He's worked it out.
Wow.
And it's all to do with DHA, but I was literally talking with him yesterday. He has a book out called The Shrinking Brain. And, I mean, listen to this. This is quite shocking and extraordinary. Cro-Magnon had a brain size over 1.5 kilos. we Homo sapiens 10,000 years ago is 1.49 kilos. 20,000 years ago in Ethiopia, this is all done on cranial size. Brain size is 1.5 kilos. Today, it's 1.32.
I knew you were going to say something like that. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about 20%, I mean, 10 to 15% loss of brain size has happened to humanity over the last 10,000 years, which coincides with when we became more land-based. Because the question is, 6.5 million years ago, we split from gorillas, chimpanzees, bonobos, and something happened. And it wasn't our genes, because we have 99% the same genes. And gradually, brain size gets bigger and bigger and bigger until the emergence of Homo sapiens 100,000 years ago. And I'm convinced, as is David Attenborough, that it was because we are the apes who exploited wetlands, swamplands, estuaries, rivers, the water's edge, became upright wading in water, got manual dexterity opening shells, had this massive supply of B12 and omega-3 and all the rest of it, not just eating marine food, but also land food, plants and so on. And the classic example of that was where I live in Wales. They found this 40,000-year-old Homo sapiens remains. I thought it was a woman called Paviland Woman, because the skeleton had all these jewelry of shells and bracelets and necklaces and so on. And anyway, it turned out to be a man. And when they analyzed the bones, over a fifth of the diet came from marine seafood. Now, we have to assume that they were exercising two or three times more than us, you know, hunting and gathering and wood and walking. You know, they didn't have a cardo or home delivery or, you know, fridges or refined foods. It was all organic. Yeah. And so it suggests that half of our entire diet, I mean, technically, would need to be marine food to get to the level of nutrients that we got, you know, during the period that led to the evolution of the human brain, which is now devolving.
Well, while we're all wrapping our brains around that one, let's take another short break. We'll be back with more from Patrick Colford right after these messages.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station, with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and my guest, Patrick Colford, who might just have blown your mind before the break talking about how our brains are devolving. Fish oils would appear to have been important in our evolution, and here's Patrick with more on their benefits.
And then I was talking to a lovely man, Captain Joe Hibberlin, who's a top NI, National Institute of Health researcher in the States, and he was in charge of the US Navy. He's a psychiatrist. And he was telling me that in his depressed patients, he gives them 4 grams of fish oils, and they not only come out of their depression, but they feel remarkably content and are reporting more desire for sex and better orgasms. And what we think happened, and this is actually... it came from David Attenborough. David Attenborough said on telly, you know, I have babies are born with a waxy waterproof layer called the vernix, which is a wipe off babies. He said, I've never, ever seen this in any land-based mammal. I wonder if it occurs in the marine mammals, like seals, for example. Mm-hmm. You'll see the odd seal when you swim.
I do. Yeah, I do. Yeah, they sing to us.
Yeah, well, so, and a French-Canadian marine biologist picked up on this, and sure enough, they have identical vernix to us. So in essence, I think what was occurring was those species that were eating a very high marine food diet felt pretty damn fantastic and ultimately committed to living in the water. We were heading that way, but didn't quite make it. And now what we've got is crashing B12, crashing omega-3, reducing brain size, reducing IQ, increasing Alzheimer's, increasing depression, increasing ADHD, autism, schizophrenia, and everything else. And I realized, despite, you know, reducing carbon and pollution and all the rest of it, you know, we are actually losing our humanity. And we need that intelligence. We need that connection. You know, we need that, that's what makes us.
Yeah.
And that is what's under threat until our governments and health services come out of the hypnosis of pharmaceutical industries imposed over them for the sake of profit and put nutrition at the very top of the health agenda, not sort of somewhere squished right down the bottom, hidden by political agendas.
Well, I think that's fascinating. And again, no argument from me. I would love everybody to take more control over their health, which is what you're doing with this. You're helping people take more control. And I'm from this area. I haven't lived here all my life. I moved back 5 years ago. And I've lived in London. You've lived in London, but I moved out because of lots of different reasons, partly though, health reasons. And now I do eat a lot of fish. I'm right by the sea and I actually live in a village which is still an operating fishing village. So I get my omegas. But I remember when I was a kid, on top of the rosehip syrup that we used to get post-war, I was getting cod liver oil tablets or capsules every day. And I'm sure that that really helped me develop when I was a child. And I'd love to see that kind of thing come back so that people are nourished properly.
It needs to, because the government of the day, when, you know, given the evidence for why to do that, of course, part of it was rickets. And it just became, you know, part of the culture.
Yeah.
And you know, we have this tremendous sort of inability to actually, you know, listen to proper science and proper logic. I mean, I think it was Finland who's, you know, gave everyone vitamin D, you know, during COVID. And, you know, they actually came off really, really well.
Yes.
So there are very simple things to do that could make phenomenal difference. And of course, we as individuals, you know, are able to do that. But what we want to do is once we've got really good data. And by the way, when you do the test, your data is anonymized, just in case.
Yeah.
But when we've got data on 1 million people, I mean, the point of the randomized controlled trials is to then roll it out to a lot of people in order to see if prevention actually works. But we're going straight there. And if we've got data on 1 million people, that's twice the size of the UK Biobank, which is kind of a big data set. If we can actually show that doing this, you know, prevents the situation, then the argument becomes, you know, a lot more tenable. But, you know, even if governments don't listen, people can.
Yeah.
The point. But I mean, I didn't come into this for any particular reason. My mother or father didn't die of Alzheimer's or whatever. But right now I'm watching my father-in-law. You know, he's forgotten all his great grandchildren, of which he has 9. He now can't remember the names of his grandchildren. He does know his daughter, who's taken care of her, my wife and I. But, you know, there will become a point where he doesn't even, you know that. And, you know, we're almost taking it for granted. And I think that's just so terrible. And he's part of that generation who didn't really pay attention to their diet, nutrition. You know, a lot of men, you know, that sort of, you know, in their 80s, you know, it was just drink a lot, basically, his primary diet. It's a tragedy, and it's an avoidable tragedy, and it's an incredibly expensive tragedy.
Mm.
And it's remarkably, you know, upsetting to watch people, you know, go through that. I might as well put my attention into, you know, into helping people prevent dementia and get a brain upgrade.
Well, absolutely. Well done you. And it is important though, isn't it? I mean, I'm older than you. I didn't realize that, but I'm 68 now. But, you know, even though I am now knocking on 70, I should still be doing stuff to help my brain and help my body carry on. There's no reason for not doing it. And as you say, you know, some things are really quite cheap to do, like fish oil capsules, you know, that they're not that expensive.
No.
So we do what we can. And I wanted to ask you to sum up in a way, because yes, we need to really start looking at our lifestyle and our diet much mm-hmm. earlier than yeah. our age right now, right? We have to start looking at it, well, right from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know, stay healthy all our lives.
I love there's a 3-6-36 rule. It takes 3 weeks to break a habit, 6 weeks to make a habit. So change is difficult. So if you think, whatever, I'm going to take something, it doesn't have to be a big thing, and I'm going to do it for 6 weeks. And then by then it becomes a habit. And the lovely thing about the test is you'll find out. So for example, if you don't score well on antioxidants, it could be something like eating blueberries.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. And then, you know, blueberries and strawberries are really, really high. And so then you just get used to that until that, you know, that sort of becomes your habit. I think the omega-3 is really important. And if you know, I both eat fish and take omega-3. So that is, I think that's essential. The B vitamins are important, but not everyone needs a lot of B12 because not everybody has an issue. So do the test and you'll probably, you know, find out what's going on there. I think it's very important to, you know, I mean, the annoying thing about the test is it shows you your weak areas. And, you know, for some of the exercise is the thing we really resist.
Yeah.
In a lot of older women particularly, it's that loss of upper body muscle, you know. So there may be something, you know, you need to do, whether it's Pilates or yoga or yeah. whatever. The walking, what's always important is you've got to think of what's challenging your brain. So if you sort of, for example, walked on a walking machine, it's not very challenging. But if you walk up a hill or along a path, your body is having to process all that balance. It's terribly good to learn something new that you fail at. In other words, take up playing the guitar and you can be crap. Or, you know, learn a new language, but it doesn't matter. I mean, I know this is a bit extreme. I'm 65. I decided I'm going to paraglide. So I've just got my paraglider license, and next week I'm off to the Alps with my teacher to fly across the Alps on a paraglider. Now, I'm a relative novice, and, you know, he's a very good teacher, and I've had to do an aerodynamics, a meteorology, and an air law exam. And when you're up there with this giant, you know, thing flapping and your brain is working a lot of stuff out, and you know, it's a bit stressful, which is probably a sort of negative, but, you know, the flying is amazing. But the point is I've challenged myself to something where I'm having to balance my whole kinesthetic sense, my whole, you know, it's using muscles I didn't know that I had. My brain is having to process strange things to do with thermals and hot fronts and cold fronts, warm fronts, which I, you know, I'm such a novice. And, you know, definitely keeping me stimulated. So we know that retiring early is a risk for Alzheimer's. However, you know, take up something. So it's like getting out of the box and not spending all your time, you know, watching the box. So the test will show you where your weak areas are. And then the challenge is to make something that you can change, that you commit to for at least 6 weeks, and then add the next layer. And then what actually happens is your brain can literally start to sing. I mean, it's not just that you dementia-proof your diet and lifestyle. It's you actually start to feel really good. And that's what we, you know, that's what we're after. And if you do these things, and it's the same with the Blue Zones. I haven't, you know, seen the Netflix series. I think I need to see that. But you'll find an extraordinary consistency of the factors that, you know, that are, you know, helping people stay healthy, happy, mentally alert, you know, connected. It's the only way to go. I mean, the other way is really awful.
It is. And, you know, so both my parents have dementia, and it isn't pleasant. It's not for them and not for the people around them. Mm. But that's not to say that we can all hold everything off indefinitely. And, you know, we do have to go at some point. You know, we all die at some point, and some of us might end up with Alzheimer's, even though we do all of these things, because there will be other things in our life, you know, the unexpected things that might affect us, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But if we can do what we can,
yeah,
when we can, that's the secret, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah. And so, Patrick, tell us where people can find all the information that they need and where they can find where to do the test.
It's very simple. You go to foodforthebrain.org. And there's a big button there that says take the test. And take the test, start the process. I would love it if you also click the button called friend and join the charity, £50 a year. It makes a phenomenal difference to what we can do in research. But just foodforthebrain.org, take the test. That's your action for today. And I always love that thing. Procrastination, she said, was the source of all my sorrow. I don't know what that word means. I'll look it up tomorrow.
Love it. I love
it. Don't say in the future. Just do it.
I love that. Patrick, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us about this, because it really is important. And if we can do anything to stem the tide of Alzheimer's, it's really well worth doing. So well done to you and your team for bringing this to us. And I will take the test again. And just so that everybody knows, you get an email almost immediately. You hear very, very quickly how you've done. So there's no hanging around and wondering, but it is a good idea just to bite the bullet, take the test and see where you are. So Patrick, thank you so, so much for joining me today. And long may we all live fit and healthy.
Thank you.
And I can tell you that when I redid the test, I scored 18% this time rather than 20. I showed a low risk in every area except brain fats, where I rated a small risk. So now I know to up my intake of healthy oils. And on that note, we're at the end of the show. Thank you for listening today. I hope that you'll join me again here on UK Health Radio and the UK Health Radio podcast. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.